Ah, ladies and gentlemen, it is the one and only, the legend in his own lunchbox, Mr. James Whale. Thank you very much. Welcome to the program. Yet again, we're here on a rather lovely spring day, wherever you might be around the world, as we head in this country anyway, the Britannia, Grand Britannia, as we head towards the Euro referendum, which is getting everybody talking about, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Rob's here producing the show. Got a friend of Elvis's coming on a little later. Actually, that's not true. He's not really a friend of Elvis's, is he?
I suppose not, no.
Mauro Durago.
Friend of the Elvis's family, I would imagine.
Friend of Elvis's family, and the man sort of behind and responsible in a way for the collaboration between Elvis and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
Sounds great. Have we got some clips?
Yeah, I think we'll have some clips on the program a little later on. Yes, we can do that too. So thank you to everybody for getting in touch today. We've got some of your thoughts on the European referendum. We'll go to those a little bit later on. Lots of you seem very, very confused about the whole issue. And I don't blame you. I think most of us are confused about the European Union issue. But first, I wanted to say a few words about the charity because Robbo thought it was rather confusing. My charity for kidney cancer, and just because a number of people get in touch and they raise some money, for which I thank you very much indeed. It's very much appreciated. We have a charity that this is its 10th year. September this year, we will have been in operation for 10 years. And we started as the James Whale Fund for Kidney Cancer. We have now taken over, they don't like that word, but we've absorbed, and they really don't like that word, but we basically, there were a number of other charities and, they seem to have now been absorbed into it. So we are now Kidney Cancer UK. This is a charity for those people who are affected by kidney cancer, administered by the James Whale Fund for the people that we put in place in the first place. And now we are the main. There are a couple of other small ones, but we are the main kidney cancer charity raising money and awareness of kidney cancer in the United Kingdom. And for that, we thank you very much indeed. Did you hear that beep in the background?
Was it your end, was it?
Well, I don't know. Is it tweets coming in for some reason? I thought everything here was turned off. Or is it your end?
No, it's not my end. I don't beep.
Do you not beep?
No.
I should turn those off, shouldn't I? Shall I check out Twitter and see if it's... and see if it's tweeting me for some reason. Let's see what we've got here. I hate it when your iPad sticks. Do you ever have that problem?
No, I've not had a sticky iPad. No.
It's interesting. Got another follower. Progressive Spain news on progressive issues, social activism and politics in Spain. They got 2,196 followers. I always like going, people follow me, I always like going into their media and see what they have in here. And it's all about Spain. And it, quite frankly, it's got, quite horrible, quite disgusting. I don't approve of bullfighting, to be honest with you. Unfortunately, there seems to be quite a lot of pictures on this of bullfighting. I don't know, what is it? Why are some people obsessed with cruelty to animals? Can anybody tell me?
No, I can't.
Demonstration outside Parliament about the breeding of dogs and illegal breeding and legal breeding of dogs, which we talked to Mark the Vet last week on the programme. Huge response to that. Thank you very much indeed. That was very nice of you. So, that was what the Progressive Spain. I wonder why they suddenly decided to follow me. It's funny who follows you, isn't it?
You mean on Twitter, yes. Yeah, that's okay.
I don't mean in the street. I don't mean walking down the street. No, on Twitter.
Mm.
Yeah, very, very strange, the sort of people who follow you. But there we are, progressive Spain. I don't know about you. I haven't been to Spain very often.
I think I've been to Mallorca, I think.
I've been to Mallorca, but that's a Balearic.
Can you say that word on the radio?
Yeah, Balearic. Yeah, it's one of the Balearic Islands.
Okay.
You know, that's Mallorca, Ibiza, and I think there's some more.
Yeah.
But I've been there. I've been to Spain twice.
Is that where Parma ham comes from, where I went?
Parma ham? Yeah, I think Parma ham comes from Parma.
Which is
Parma in Mallorca, and I never know whether that is the home of Parma ham or Parma in Italy. I think Parma ham is Italian.
Well, I had Parma ham while I was there.
Did you?
Mm.
Well, I suppose if you think about it, any ham that comes from Parma would be Parma ham, wouldn't it?
I suppose it would, yes.
You know, when you think about it, it's like any cheese that comes from Stilton is Stilton cheese.
I'm not bothered about that, though, because I don't like cheese.
Oh, I love cheese. Don't you like cheese? I was having a long conversation on one of my radio shows the other day about fridges.
Right.
No, I know. I couldn't believe it either. They wanted me to talk about fridges, and it actually went quite well. They wanted to start out, but you know, if you have milk, you shouldn't put it in the door of a fridge.
Well, why do they make the door flaps to contain milk?
Oh, who flipping knows? But I mean, who cares? If people are stupid enough to drink off milk, that's their fault.
So, is the door the warmest place? Is it? Is that why?
Well, no, it's one of the. You ought to have it around the middle shelf of the fridge to keep it fresh for longer. But the fact is, if you have milk and it goes off, you can smell it, can't you?
Well, then it becomes cheese, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So don't worry about it. The same with cheese. If you get mildew on it, it goes a bit mouldy, scrape it off and eat the rest of the cheese. It's fine.
I thought that what they do then is just rename the cheese.
Blue cheese, yeah, I don't know. But I couldn't believe we have this whole thing of discussing how to use a fridge properly.
Our freezer's outside at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah, we emptied it and threw it outside. We look like hillbillies at our house now.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, get rid of the freezer. Just do the shopping as you need it.
Yeah, daily shopping.
Well, it's a big thing about filling up a freezer with stuff and you never use it.
That's why we did what we did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Mrs. W, some years ago when we had a freezer, we don't have a big freezer anymore. We don't have a freezer. We just have the freezer with the fridge. She said, let's clear this all out, but let's eat it. And for weeks, we're eating the most appalling food that she must have put in there years ago.
2004 was some of the food we had in our freezer.
Really?
Yeah.
And did you eat it?
No, of course not.
Well, why not? It's in the freezer. Why didn't you eat it?
I wouldn't have eaten it in 2004.
Well, that's stupid. I mean, what a waste of food. I wonder how many people listening to this have got freezers with food in that they are never, ever going to eat, yet they're quite prepared to pay the electricity to keep the freezer going.
It is ridiculous. It must be very expensive.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
Don't freeze anything apart from ice cubes.
No. Yeah, a few ice cubes for the drinks in the summer and blocks of ice cream. But what else do you need to freeze?
Fish fingers.
People make these meals and freeze them.
No, I don't do that.
And then they never eat them. I find that really quite ridiculous.
We don't freeze nothing anymore.
We don't freeze anything.
We don't do that either.
No, it's grammatically wrong when you say we don't freeze nothing anymore.
Well, you learn something new every day.
Well, yes. How are you doing with the Welsh language, by the way?
Doing rather well.
Good, you don't like me to talk about the Welsh language, do you? I always get a kick out of doing that. Welsh language and cyclists are the things that get the best response.
I think you'll find it's always me that gets the kick when you talk about Welsh language.
Yeah, and when you have not a go at cyclists, but just sort of try and put cyclists in a position where they will find it easier to exist, you know, that my whole idea, my ethos of my discussion is that a cyclist should be as recognisable as any other person on the roads. They always get a bit fed up, don't they? They threaten violence and all sorts.
I've got a bike, so I can't say anything.
Yeah, but you're not a cyclist, are you, really?
Well, I cycled it from Halfords to my house.
Yeah, but that's hard. I mean, you've never used it since.
No.
You know, that's what people do. They buy a bike, they ride it from the shop home, and then they never use it. I used to be a very serious cyclist.
Really?
Until I got, you know, the modern roads are not the place to ride a bike on.
I realised that when I cycled it from Halfords to my house.
Exactly. I mean, if you live in the country, if you get a mountain bike and you can ride without upsetting too many people on foot, you know, around the sort of country, that's fine. The sort of places you would ride a horse.
Mm.
Fine. But you know, packs of them marauding along country lanes at the weekend. And then now in London, we've got these cycleways like the Cycle Superhighway that just causes so much congestion.
I'm nowhere near, so I'm okay.
No, problem with cyclists, of course, is that they've got this feeling of superiority the whole time. Make sure the cyclist has got high visibility stuff on it and a recognisable number, and I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem. So that a cyclist can be held responsible for all the things that they do, like the motorist.
I think that's fair, yes.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I don't know how I got onto this. Anyway, right, shall we meet Mauro Durango? Mauro Durago. Mauro comes from Italy.
Yes.
Actually, yeah. And I met him a few years ago, first of all, and I bumped into him again the other day, and I'm sure he'll tell the story, and found out that he was one of the people responsible for this collaboration between Elvis Presley and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
Can I play that clip now that he sent us?
Yeah, well, why don't you play that? He must be worth a few, Bob. That must have sold millions.
Let's find out.
Yeah, let's have a listen.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why, oh why, oh why can't my dream come true?
Now, here's a guy that I met some time ago, Mauro Durago. Now, I never know whether I get your name right, Mauro. Mauro Durago.
Yeah, it's Mauro Durago, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a cowboy, isn't it? It's the sort of name a cowboy would have.
Yeah, oh, well, there you go.
An Italian cowboy.
Yeah.
Now, remind me when we first met. It was when?
Oh, God, it must have been about 15 years ago. I was promoting a record, and I just remember meeting you, and it was great, actually, because we met, and I said, hey, James, I've got this record I'm doing, and then you it was lovely, actually, and you said, oh, come on my show in the next couple of days, and because I was connected to, I had my first record deal with Stockhaven and Waterman, and we talked about Pete on your show and things like that. It was good fun, you know?
Yeah, Pete, who was he was very good to me at the when we started the charity, the James Whale Fund for Kidney Cancer, now Kidney Cancer UK, and he helped us launch it. It was very good. What I didn't know until I met you again a couple of weeks ago is that you were the brains behind the Elvis Presley and the London. Was London Symphony Orchestra.
Royal Philharmonic, yeah. Well, it was the guy who came out with the idea was a friend of mine called Don Reedman, who had a few hits like Hooked on Classics in the past, and also had Reload with Tom Jones, the Duets album a few years ago. You remember that?
I do.
So Don had been in the business for years, and I'd been working on him with him for a while, and I also done a chill out album with him before. And so he actually had the initial idea because he'd worked with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And it was about 5-6 years ago that the idea came about. But what happened was, nobody was really biting at it, was trying to get it off the ground. And then basically 3 years ago, 3 odd years ago, I turned around to him and said, well, you know what, no one's bitten on this yet. It's such a lovely idea. I'd like to approach Priscilla Presley, because I knew she was doing pantomime in Wimbledon. But the thing was obviously I never knew her, but being in this business for a long time, I've always gone out of my way to try and make things happen. So Don said, well, if you can, it'd be great. So to cut a long story short, I made my way to Wimbledon, saw the show that she was in, the pantomime, and went backstage and introduced myself. And, you know, while we were talking, I relayed to her, you know, my friend Don Reedman's in the music business. He's got this great idea about putting Elvis with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And I could see her light up, because she said, I get so many ideas come to me. But what's nice about this is Elvis always loved big orchestras and never got the chance to recall the big orchestra when he was alive. And this would just be really great, you know. And that's how it sparked off. That's how it started there at Wimbledon, really, you know.
How do you get... I mean, I am sure that if I turned up to a pantomime, I'd have absolutely no chance of getting through... to see Priscilla Presley. How did you manage to get her minders to let you go and see her?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out myself, I'll be honest, James, because what happened was when I went to the pantomime, this is really strange. It doesn't happen. It was just one of those things. When I went there, I bumped into her PA in the foyer, because her PA is called Vicky, and she was there, and I knew it was her PA. And I just introduced myself to her and said, my name's Mauro, I'm also in the music business, and, you know, I'd just love to say hi to Priscilla. Oh, because obviously I'd been a fan of Elvis since I was a kid. My mum gave me his 40 greatest hits when I was 6 years old, and that's what got me hooked on music. And then obviously I got into everything else, but it was like my first love in a way. So I thought, well, this would just be great to meet her. And she was lovely, and Vicky just said, okay, Mauro, after the show, come and meet me and we'll see what we can do. And it was just like a chance thing. And that's what happened. And Vicky took me to Priscilla, and it was just like that. But the nicest thing about that was our first meeting. And then I said to Vicky, oh, great, let me know, you know, if we can progress this. And this is, again, this was strange. It's not the sort of thing that happens every day. I left my number with Vicky. And she called me a couple of days later, because I said, you know, I'd love to bring my friend Don to see the show, because it was Don's idea in the first place. And that's what happened. So we progressed it like that. We saw the show. Then eventually that, you know, ended up that we went to tea with her. This was, again, it was lovely, because I said, in between shows, Priscilla, you know, she had to do two shows a day. It'd be nice to do tea. So then what happened was we ended up having a lovely tea in Wimbledon, and then, you know, talk about the idea even more. And Priscilla got really excited and said, this is great. Because the other nice thing about that is when they first met, Priscilla and Elvis, she was 14, he was 24, 10 years older than her. And she said he was excited that when they met in Germany, in her record collection, apart from having obviously the Elvis albums, because he was a big star already at the time with his rock and roll material, she had Mario Lanza, the Student Prince, which Elvis was a fan of Mario Lanza too, being orchestral and opera, and Dean Martin. So this is where Priscilla went back to the early days and thought, you know, he's always loved this music since day one that I met him, you know, and he thought it was lovely. Even I like Mario Lanza, 14-year-old girl, you know. And this is how it, you know, it was all part of history, really, you know.
So you were basically the fixer between the idea, and you got the Royal Philharmonic together, and you got Priscilla to allow you to use the voice of Elvis Presley. Now, how did you... was she there at all the recordings? Did she have a say on how they went?
When it got to that bit, yeah. I was basically fixing it up to get Priscilla involved. But then Don Reedman, like I say, it was his idea. Because he had worked with the Royal Philharmonic, he was the one who then progressed it into the studio, because we recorded it at Abbey Road Studios, because I thought it would be lovely to take... It's the Royal Philharmonic, Elvis being the king, and it would be lovely to take him to the Beatles studio, Studio 2, and then you're marrying it all up, you know, English... Mm. you know, in England, Abbey Road Studios, Elvis's voice for the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. But what Priscilla done, she was overlooking it. So she started the ball rolling in America with the head of Sony Legacy, to because they had the rights, and she's obviously also, you know, oversees everything with Elvis. And she sort of overlooked it all. And you know, Donna's in the studio, and I, you know, stayed with, you know, was in the Abbey Road in, with Don, and it just all took place like that, really.
When she heard the first track laid down, what did she say?
Oh, it was amazing, because what we said from day one was that, you know, Elvis was always, in effect, a producer of his own material. Because, you know, when you'd see him on stage in Vegas, or even from the early days when he'd done Hound Dog, there's these stories where he would cut 10, 15 versions of the same record, which you would do in them days live. But he would always be the one to say, oh, I want take seven, or I want that, you know, the guitarist to do this. So in effect, we took that on board, that Elvis was all about feel. You know, Elvis was all about how he felt about a record. And so what happened is, in Abbey Road Studios, was we let Elvis, his vocal, be the conductor, and we let that feel. We didn't want to let down Elvis Presley. We, you know, made him sort of the conductor of this, of the material. It was already recorded, and the orchestra basically just was like a fuel injection to what he had done, you know. And so when we had the first couple of tracks and gave it to Priscilla, she was overwhelmed. She said, oh, this is lovely. This sounds exactly like what he would love, because it was big. You know, he liked bigness. He liked, you know, that sort of thing, you know. Because also, there's other stories where, you know, when he would go in the recording studios to record his material, sometimes he'd walk out and, you know, the Colonel, being his manager, would say, oh, put Elvis's vocal up higher, louder than the music. And Elvis wouldn't like that, because he loved this fullness of a record, and he'd love his vocal to be within the track. So you'd get, he liked power. And sometimes he'd get annoyed at that, you know. And so that's one thing we didn't want to do with this record. We wanted to make sure that full orchestra and his vocal, you know, blended, and it was powerful. And then, like I say, when she heard it, she said, oh, she was just overwhelmed. And yeah, she loved what was coming out, you know. And we made sure we kept sending all the tracks backwards and forwards to her, so she could oversee it, you know. And she chose tracks too, you know. So she was, you know, really involved as an executive producer on this.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I would dry them all. I'm on your side. Oh, when time gets rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay.
How did Sony react to it when they eventually heard it? Because they're very, very keen to keep stuff that they have, particularly in the Legends collection, as pure as they can.
They did come down to the studio and they were listening to it as it was coming, you know, as it was going along. And they were, like, overwhelmed too, because when, you know, when you're sitting in Abbey Road, and especially when you hear Elvis's voice on its own, it was amazing, because he had such a tone to his vocal that even without any music, he had, in this one voice, he sort of had a bass, a middle, and a treble in one. That was his tone, and it trembled, you know, in the studio. You could, on his own, it sounded like a record anyway. You know, his voice was so great. And so, when we're all there with the representatives of Sony, and then, you know, hearing that, and then hearing the Royal Phil then work with it, you could already see from the beginning it was just magic, you know. And It just worked, and they were overwhelmed from the beginning too. So, you know, I think it was one of those things that you could already tell from day one it was working, you know?
How many records have you sold now worldwide of this Elvis Presley Royal Phil collaboration?
Well, worldwide, I don't know yet. It's still coming in. But I can tell you, in England, about a month or so ago, we had already reached over 1 million sales just in England. And that's a phenomenal from someone who has not been around, you know, since 1977. And, you know, he overtook a lot of the chart acts. So it just shows you the power of Elvis and the power of the love of his fans. And also, I think... The power of this record, how it's something different, and it's something that reinterprets Elvis in a different way, but still keeping the feel. And it shows that the feel of Elvis Presley was not compromised, you know. And it's just been amazing. And yeah, so like I say, worldwide, I'm not sure how much it's sold, but I know in England it's already done over 1 million, which is amazing, you know.
So it'll have done well over that in America, I presume.
I presume, yeah. I'm like I say, I'm not sure. I don't know the figures yet. I know it got to number one in Australia and a couple of other countries, but I'm not sure. But yeah, I just know the figures in England at the moment, you know. But everything's still coming in. And also, I spoke to Priscilla a few weeks ago, and she was over the moon when she heard that it sold over 1 million, saying that Elvis would be so proud, you know, if he was around today. It would be amazing for him to know that after all these years, you know, he's still got overwhelming affection from his fans. And, you know, she's blown away with, you know, we all thought it would do well, but not this well, you know. So she's so excited about it, you know.
Do you envisage releasing some more singles from the album?
Well, at the moment, we're not sure, because there's been a few out there, because there's a lovely version of Bridge Over Troubled Water, which had Duane Eddy on it with his guitar, which is fantastic. He'd done a little bit on that. And then also, we the other single that came out was the duet. We had a duet with Michael Bublé, or Fever, because Michael had already recorded Fever himself on his own album, and obviously Elvis had recorded it, and... you know, and it was just like a natural progression. And that was lovely, you know, and so that is a lovely version of that. There's a great track on there as well called Burning Love that opens up the album. And it's such a punchy record. And it's one of my favorites. It just straight away, it just goes into this really, you know, you can just visualize Elvis, you know, you know, singing it when you hear it. It's just great, you know. So, but I think right now, I don't know if there's any more talk of any more singles, but fingers crossed, hopefully there'll be another volume two of this coming out, hopefully, fingers crossed, next year.
Mauro, let's talk a bit about you now. You are a singer in your own right as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a singer-songwriter, yeah. Been doing it for quite a while.
And so you're also, you've got some stuff you're doing with Boy George as well.
That's right, yeah. Well, I'm because I've always, again, we've talked about Elvis and whatever, you know, Beatles and stuff, and I've always liked, you know, all sorts of music. So I've made an album, which should be released soon, but I'm going to be mastering it at Abbey Road as well, but I've just recorded it. And I've called it Rewind, because what I've done, I've written all the songs on this album, and there's a couple of collaborations, like, and one is with Boy George. And the reason I called it Rewind is because, like I said, I like a lot of different vast music. I've got songs on there, like one sounds a bit like a Motown record, one sounds a bit like a 60s Beatles record, and another one sounds like a modern dance record. But I've like captured all of the eras, but made it modern in my way and wrote all the songs. So it sounds like a covers album, but it's not. It's a covers album that's original material. So because I was making this, I was talking to George, Boy George, and Rob Davis, who wrote Can't Get Out of My Head for Kylie Minogue. He used to be in a group called Mud back in the 70s. And we were working on this track called King of Kings. And I said, well, that would really suit my album Rewind, because this now sounds like a modern 80s record that you would be released in the 80s, like with maybe Boy George or George Michael or whatever, but again with my own vibe. So anyway, we went to record it, and it was great. It came out so cool and lovely harmonies. So I love my harmonies and stuff. And so that's our lot of sort of throwback to the 80s. And George wrote it, like I say, with Rob, and then he on our on the single that's actually on iTunes at the moment, the 4-track EP. George actually also mixed a couple of club versions of it too, of this King of Kings record. So that's sort of something that's out there to give a taster of what's going to happen with the album, really. So it was really exciting, you know.
And what else are you going to... When are you going to perform this, or when can we hear some of these?
Well, at the moment, I'm just trying to get some dates together. So at the moment, I'm just concentrating on finishing the album and mastering it. But I'm hoping towards the end of the year, I'm going to start doing some shows. And I'm hoping that the album will be released in the next 2 or 3 months too. So, you know, it's something that I'll definitely let you know about. But, it's, you know, like I say, it's exciting. And I'm shooting a video in the next 3 or 4 weeks to... a song called Heartbreaker I wrote with that. Again, it's a throwback to Motown, but it's an original song. And I'll be shooting a video in 2 weeks' time. That'd be another a single from the album. So you've got King of Kings of George that's sort of out there just as a promotional thing. And then Heartbreaker will be hopefully out soon. And then I'll start building it up from there, James, you know.
Well, maybe we can spin one on the program. What do you think?
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah.
What do you think we should play, Murrow?
Well, if you've got King of Kings that's out there already, that'd be lovely to play.
Moody boy under moody skies, hood pulled down over troubled eyes. I hate the world, I just don't know why, I just do. My moves, check my diamond ring. I know it won't amount to anything. Born to pay for my father's sins, still I'm the King of Kings. True love, there's no one else but you.
You can't touch.
Right, there we are. That was the collaboration with Boy George. And, you know, I think that could be a hit, don't you?
I like Boy George's stuff.
Yeah, I do. In fact, if you're a new listener to the James Whale Radio Show here, of course, wherever you're listening to us at this particular time, go back in the archive that you can find on the website at
jameswhaleradio.co.uk.
I just wanted to make sure that you were awake. And you can hear, I did an interview with George, I don't know, back about 30 programmes ago, something like that. I don't know the exact number, do you?
A while ago, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but you'll find it. Big picture of George, and have a listen to that. Now, we were talking about the European debate, and I think that's something we should talk about regularly because, of course, that's coming up on the 23rd of June. And it's getting closer, isn't it?
The percentage between the two sides or the date?
The date.
Yes, it's getting closer.
The date is getting closer. Loads of response you were on Facebook. These are just some of them. I won't go through them all. There are far too many. John Hammond says, remember the brick?
No.
Well, remember a house brick. Do you remember a brick?
Oh, remember what a brick looks like.
Yeah. Right. Well, think of this, he says. A brick is only a brick.
Marvellous.
But together with other bricks, it can be anything it wants to be. A wall, a house, a tower block, preferably with a penthouse. Why be just a brick when you can be a whole building? That's interesting. That's his thought on the EU debate. And Stavros Big comes up with this. We fought two world wars to stay independent. We don't need expensive trade deals to trade with other countries. We need to stay out of the EU and be proud of our heritage before it crumbles around us. So there we are. There's another one here. Christopher Francis. I'm proud to be British and always have been. Even before the referendum was called, I was in favour of leaving the EU. We are such a rich and diverse country. We should be celebrating that within our own borders, creating our own laws, using the money we give the EU to improve services and infrastructure within the United Kingdom. Christopher's view. What else have we got here? This is Matt West. He says, I don't want to be told how powerful my Hoover should be for $350 million a day. Leave. In the interest of balancing this up, I don't know. I'm trying to find it. Do you know the more vocal people are to leave? Spencer James says, I'm a British person living and working outside of the UK. I can visit home with no issues. I can move money across borders with no problems. And I don't have to worry about a visa to work here. We should remain in Europe. It's interesting, you know. It's still, whatever anybody says, the younger people of this country want to stay within Europe and the old people want to get out. Now, I'm an old person and I'm not telling you what I want one way or the other. But I would counsel opinion should be that we ought to start thinking about the positives on both sides, if you can find them. Positives on leaving Europe, I suppose the positive on leaving Europe would be that we might save some money, although that's up for debate. And one of the main positives, I think, that nobody's spoken about for staying in the European Union is once it starts to disintegrate, and if we vote to leave, I think others will vote to leave as well. And the interesting thing is that at the moment, fairly extreme right-wing forces, particularly in Austria, are coming to the fore. I don't know. Are we going to be less safe if Britain leaves the EU, if the European Union begins to fragment, and the United Kingdom, because Scotland say that they will want another referendum because they reckon that they want to stay in the European Union. If we leave it, then they want to leave the United Kingdom. I mean, I don't know. Is it benefits one way or the other way? Have you made your mind up, Rob?
Almost.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think David Cameron was probably wrong to offer a referendum, because when he offered the referendum, he was doing it because he was worried about UKIP. And then he said everybody could have a vote. So it just gets more and more confusing to everyone. I think the fascinating thing is the people I meet who say, I'll vote you out. I don't know why I say they talk like that, but I'll vote you out. It's all about immigration, mate. You see, I don't think it'll make any difference one way or the other. I mean, people will still come to this country. Legally and illegally, people will still come to this country. You know, Brits are basically, we're quite lazy, aren't we?
We are a bit. Wouldn't they have to go through England to get to Scotland, who are in the EU?
No, well, you could fly directly into Scotland, can't you?
I suppose you can, yes.
Of course you can. Don't be so ridiculous. And Wales, what does Wales want to do? I mean, I heard somebody on the news the other day going on, oh, it's all about immigration, in a Welsh accent, all about immigration. And, of course, there are less people go to Wales from outside Wales than any other part of Europe.
Yeah.
You know, you've got... nobody wants to go to Wales. I wonder why that is.
Bit rural, isn't it, really?
You know, and I speak as a Welshman.
Hmm.
Yeah, but there we are. Okay, so we will continue to ask the question, the European Union in or out? And if you're a young person, and a lot of young people think that those of us who are a little older, Robbo, like you and me, really shouldn't be voting on this issue. It should be younger people voting. But, you know, if you feel that way, go and vote. Lots of people who are of voting age, younger people, have not registered to vote. So when the European referendum is finished and you don't like the result, don't moan to me if you didn't vote.
I can't believe you're clumping me into the category of old.
Well, you are, aren't you?
Well, not compared to some other people.
You're the same age as me, aren't you?
Are you 35?
Well, around about that age, yes.
Well, in that case, then we're old.
You know, but I thought you were about 50.
Thanks.
Aren't you?
No.
You can't tell me you're under 50.
I'm quite a bit under 50.
No, really?
Hmm.
Gosh. Yeah.
Might be heading in that direction.
Well, I think you probably are, if you're not already there.
You are listening to James and Rob on the James Webb Radio Show.
Ah, right. Welcome back, James Well Radio. And, of course, you can get in touch with us at jameswellradio@gmail.com. If you want to email me any of your thoughts, jameswellradio@gmail.com, or go on our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at...
Oh, at the James Well is yours, and at James Well Show is the show's.
Thank you. I just thought I'd keep you in the loop there. Right. Shall we get a little... Oh, you want to play this thing? This is shocking. Shocking. The Rusty Nuts, their new single, She Is Everything.
Yeah, well, we get sent music all the time, and I think it's only fair that we give, like, a broad taste of different styles.
Well, this is some of the worst I've ever heard. And if you send me stuff like this, I don't really see why I should play it. I mean, this is... Are you sure you want to give this a spin?
Think of me as the David Walliams of the James Whale radio show.
Yeah, I've never understood... Oh, come on. Listen, Britain's Got Talent. What is going on? The other night, they put through to the final a bloke who swallows swords, which was so appalling they couldn't even do it live.
Mm.
So how on earth that's going to be on the Royal Variety Performance, I don't know.
Well, we'll put a TV set up in front of the Queen, I would imagine.
Well, it's just completely shocking. And then the other night, they had these flipping stormtroopers or whatever they are, who quite frankly couldn't dance, were terribly dull and dressed up as people out of Star Wars. I mean, just shocking.
Hang on a minute. To be fair, though, they are wearing a helmet and they can't see where they're going, so that's quite good.
No, it's not. I mean, what sort of prat voted for them?
I'm saying nothing.
You didn't. Oh. I don't understand. Simon Cowell, oh, they're great. The Queen would love to see them. They were shocking. There was a lovely couple the other night who did some ballet. They didn't get through. A young kid, I'm sorry, I'm sure he's very sweet and everything else, but he was just not... He might be a good dancer. In the future, he might be a good dancer if he had a good teacher. But it was all just... It was just nothing, really. And some great singers, maybe they should have been on X Factor or The Voice, didn't get through. The guy playing the piano was brilliant. Those four girl singers were great. You know, we're getting rubbish going through to the final. Why?
I don't know. We're British. We're quirky. We like things like that.
We're British. We're quirky. We like things like that.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me. I'm going to live somewhere else. Anyway, do you want to play this rubbish?
The Rusty Nuts.
Yeah, go on. Let's hear it.
She's my missus. She's my woman. She's my keyboard. She's my lettuce. She's my lover. She's my Liverpool. She's my palace. She's my princess. She's my heart. She's my keeper. Old teacher. She's my dinner. She's my souffle. She's my guitar.
Do you know, I'd like to hear what other people think. I just thought, what is the point of their existence?
Somebody out there must like this kind of music.
Gosh, that's as interesting as a debate the other day. I don't know if you saw this story in the papers. A whistle in a school yard. This was a story I saw in the papers. In fact, I think we did it on Sky News last week. Anne Diamond and I did it on Sky News. And the story is that a primary school in St. Albans, is it St. Albans or, no, not St. Albans, anyway, somewhere near there. Gosh, where's the place with the concrete cow? What's the town with the concrete cow?
I don't know. I've never been outside Bangor. I would never.
No. Well, there's a town with it's not St. Albans. What is it called? Oh, I've forgotten what it's called now. Someone will tell me. Anyway, primary school there. Funnily enough, a Catholic primary school. And I thought the Catholics were very big on discipline and you know, making sure they like the spare the rod and or save the... I don't know. So anyway, they've banned the use of the whistle in the school playground because it might frighten the little children. All right. They're saying it's too aggressive. To blow a whistle to call the children back into school is too aggressive. So they have banned it.
Milton Keynes.
Thank you. That's where the cow is. You Googled that, didn't you, while I was talking? Milton Keynes. A school in Milton Keynes has done this. I mean, how bizarre. How very bizarre.
I've got an idea.
What?
At some point between now and the end of the show, I'm going to put an audio clip of a whistle in very loudly and see if we can scare a few of our listeners.
Good idea, because I don't think you'll scare anybody.
We'll give it a go, good experiment.
You know, what are you going to do? Apparently the teacher will put his or her hand up in the playground and the children will orderly go back into their class.
Orderly.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Anyway, that's one. If it had been April, I would have thought that was an April Fool. So, tech talk this week. What have we got?
Twitter.
I beg your pardon?
Twitter.
I beg your pardon?
You know, Twitter, your favourite thing.
Oh, Twitter, yeah, go on.
You can now have 140 characters, which you've always had, but they were taken up if you used photos or links. Yep. Now they exclude those characters out, so now we've all got 140 characters to say what we like on Twitter.
As well as photographs, too.
And links, yes.
Good, good, good. Well, that's excellent. That's excellent, yeah. So we can tweet more.
We can tweet
or less.
More.
Yeah, thing about Twitter is I like it to be succinct and to the point, and mostly about my dogs.
I've noticed.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, questions? Then I think I've got a drink waiting on the bar.
Okay. Well, it should be on your table, really, not at the bar.
Yeah. No. But so if we could get going, so I could get a drink. Thank you.
Okay. Damo McCoy.
Damo, yes.
He's a regular. Why is it called After Dark when it's actually After Light?
That's a very good point. Very good point. I think because it's got more of a ring to it. After Dark. Damo, no, you're right. It is After Light, isn't it? Because dark comes after light. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Karen Clift.
Hello, Karen.
How come Top Cat can get a mortgage and he doesn't work, yet the unemployed can't?
I've been asking the same question and got in touch with the mortgage providers, and they said if I could do an impersonation of Top Cat, then they'd be happy to re-examine my mortgage request. So far, I've heard nothing.
Come on, then. Well, let's have a listen, your Top Cat impression.
Top Cat, he's indestructible. Top Cat, he's... I don't know anymore.
That's the song. That's not how Top Cat talks.
Isn't it?
No.
Oh, hey, Officer Dibble, it's Top Cat.
I think that's the other one. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Keep working on it. You'll be fine.
It's probably why I can't get a mortgage.
That's probably true. Mm. Jim Callan.
Yep.
Who does all the appointments for TV doctors when they're on the box? And are we paying for the TV appearances?
Yes, no, and yes.
Okay. Scott Page. At petrol pumps, why does the diesel nozzle and surrounding area always look dirtier than the petrol ones?
Do you know, I've never understood that. Why are people more messy when they are loading their vehicle with diesel than petrol? I think it is because there are rather butch people who have diesel machines, and they don't want to be seen to worrying about a little spillage here and there.
So the rest of us are all sort of airy-fairy types.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you use petrol, you're a bit airy-fairy, but diesel is for real men.
Okay. Ian Lucy.
Hi, Ian Lucy.
James, how do you relax? And is the James whale we see on the TV / radio the same whale that is at home or away from media spotlight?
Absolutely the same.
Yeah, okay.
Same. What do you mean? Absolutely the same.
Yes, he's exactly the same as he is. He's really.
I am exactly the same. In fact, this program comes from my home, in my studio in my home, and I'm just sitting here with my feet up. Oh, gosh. And just relaxing. What the hell was that?
So it does shock people then.
It doesn't shock. I was just relaxing and it just woke me up slightly.
Okay. Paul Hyam. What's the difference between flammable and inflammable?
If you don't know the answer to that question, I don't think you should be going out of the house.
Dave Benjamin, do other dimensions exist?
Of course they do.
And finally, David Hazlitt. He's always going on about this. You failed to give me the winning lottery numbers. When can I expect to get them?
I've looked into you. I've run a check on your background, Dave. I don't think it's good for you to have any more money.
Right.
I think that's fair enough, don't you?
Well, are you checking out all the listeners?
Well, of course, I always check people out that I'm talking to.
Okay, all right.
It's amazing what you can do online now.
It is, yes. Just Google people's names and everything will come up.
There's nobody you can't check out. And if you have a question, I've never been stumped with a question. I have an answer for every question you can throw at me. Get in touch, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com.
I've got a question.
Go on.
Are we going to be here next week?
Don't know.
listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.